The following story takes place between the year 1154 and 1272. In the previous episode, we saw how the son of Geoffrey of Anjou and Matilda, Henry II, came to the English throne, thus beginning the Plantagenet dynasty, which would rule the fate of England for the next 245 years. During the period of anarchy, many barons had kept their castles and no longer answered to the king, and the kingdoms of Scotland and Wales had conquered some territories from England. The new monarch's first task was to fight against all of them to recover whatever he could. It is said of Henry II that he was a ruthless king with the barons who opposed him, and he expelled many from their fiefs to install his own loyal friends in their place. Thanks to his double inheritance and his marriage to Eleanor of Aquitaine, a highly influential noblewoman, Henry II gained control of the so-called Angevin Empire, which covered all this area you see on the map. From Scotland to the Pyrenees, it was all his, which made him one of the most powerful kings in Europe at that time. The problem was that it was not a centralized kingdom at all. Each territory had its own laws, institutions, and currencies. Henry II spoke French and needed an interpreter for English. In fact, he spent most of his reign in both Rouen, in Normandy, and in Anjou, more specifically in its capital, under something that many of his predecessors and also his successors did. They didn't want to spend much time in England because they said it was cold, and of course also because Manchester was there. Eleanor of Aquitaine is an important and also very interesting figure. She had experience in politics, was the former Queen of France, and was very fond of culture and poetry. Henry had 4 children with her. The eldest was Henry the Young King, who married Princess Margaret, the daughter of King Louis VII of France. Thanks to this, the English king gained access to the territory of Vexy. Later, Richard the Lionheart, Geoffrey, and John Lackland would be born. He also had several daughters who married very powerful people. Finally, he had many illegitimate children with the daughter of the King of France, Adela, who was a child, and this caused a huge scandal at the time because he kept her as a concubine. And later, he also had an affair with an abbess named Rosamund Clifford. One of Henry's main concerns was justice. Feudal law stated that it was the lord of each fief who resolved the cases affecting his vassals. But Henry sought to have more decision-making power over certain matters, and royal courts of judges were created to operate in each county, with sheriffs being responsible for bringing the condemned to justice. Years later, in 1188, Ranulf de Granville wrote the Granville Treatise, a treatise on English law. In 1162, it's important to talk about Thomas Becket, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Theobald of Bec died, and Henry II appointed his chancellor or right-hand man Thomas Becket to that position. The two of them got along incredibly well, but as soon as Becket became Archbishop, something changed in him radically, and no one really knows why. He abandoned his ostentatious lifestyle and became quite austere. And not only that, Henry wanted the Church of England to be subject to his will, to be able to appoint ecclesiastical positions at will and all that. However, Becket told him, not a chance. In those years, crimes committed by a member of the clergy were judged by an ecclesiastical court, not a civil one. The sentences were lighter because they weren't allowed to execute anyone or impose physical punishments. The thing is, about 1/6 of the population belonged to some religious order. And of course, the king couldn't judge these people. The first of the disputes between Henry II and Becket was for this reason. And later, Becket refused to hand over the church's revenues to the king. That's when things really got heated between the two of them. Then we get to the year 1164, when Henry II issued the Constitutions of Clarendon, through which the king established his supremacy and authority over the church. Many members of the clergy submitted to the king, but Becket did not. Because of this, the king ordered his arrest. Thomas Becket was in prison, accused of various crimes such as embezzlement or trying to appeal to the Pope without the king's permission. However, the archbishop eventually managed to escape and went into exile in France under the protection of King Louis VII. There in France, he maintained contact with Pope Alexander III, whom Emperor Frederick Barbarossa had driven out of Rome. But this guy wasn't much help. In 1166, Henry II came to control Brittany. In 1169, the conquest of Ireland began, which would last for several centuries. The story begins with the man considered the greatest traitor in Irish history, an exiled king of Leinster named Dermot MacMurrough. He made a pact with the Count of Pembroke, Richard Fitzgilbert de Clare, known as Strongbow, and told him that if he helped him reclaim his Irish throne, he would marry him to his daughter, Aoife, and make him heir to the kingdom. They managed to take Dublin, and the following year Dermot died and Richard was crowned King of Leinster. Henry II decided to intervene, and they reached an amicable agreement. Richard would continue to control Leinster, but as a fief, and that was how the gradual English conquest of Ireland began. They would not fully control it until 1600. In 1170, Henry II's son, Henry the Young King, was crowned king, even though his father was still alive. Supposedly, this was to be done by the Archbishop of Canterbury, who was Becket, but it was actually performed by the Archbishop of York. And of course, this was like adding fuel to the fire of the religious conflict. In response to Becket's protests, Pope Alexander III eventually ordered an interdict on all of England as punishment. And what is an interdict? Well, it's a measure that banned all church rites and services throughout England. No masses, no weddings, no communions, no funerals.
Wait. I'm joking.
Henry II saw what was happening and said, "Come on, Becket, come back to England and let's talk." And Becket returned, and as soon as he arrived, he started excommunicating several bishops. The king got fed up and said something like, "Isn't anyone going to rid me of this troublesome priest?" And four knights, eager to win royal favor, took that statement quite literally and decided to go to Canterbury and kill Thomas Becket. This murder shocked all of Christendom. Becket was canonized and became a symbol of the church's independence from the state, and the king had to give up his ambitions to control the Church of England and perform public penance. All the bishops present had to strike him with a rod 5 times, and each monk of Canterbury 3 times, and there were 80 monks. The king returned to his warm castle. And well, thanks to the Compromise of Avranches, in 1172, what had been agreed upon at Clarendon was scaled back, and the church continued to maintain its own courts. One of the most famous prelates was Hubert Walter, papal legate in England. Everything seemed calm, but no, the biggest upheaval Henry II faced was the uprising of his wife and sons against him. That was the Great Revolt that began in 1173. In those years, young Henry was set to inherit England, Normandy, and Anjou. Geoffrey would get Brittany, Richard, Eleanor's favorite son, would have Aquitaine, and John was left with nothing else, the nickname John Lackland. However, young Henry was a boy hungry for power and wealth, and he started to fall out with his father. In contrast, his father's favorite was John, to whom he gave 3 very fine castles, Chinon, Loudoun, and Mirabeau. This angered young Henry so much that he ran off with King Louis VII of France and started this great revolt, with the help of his mother and his brothers Richard and Geoffrey. Eleanor tried to flee from Poitiers to Paris disguised as a man to join her sons, but she was caught, and King Henry II kept her locked up in various castles for about 16 years under different regimes of semi-freedom. William I, King of Scotland, also got involved in the affair, but he was defeated and captured at the Battle of Alnwick in 1174. Yes, there are 2 battles with the same name. To be released, William of Scotland had to sign the Treaty of Falaise, which made Scotland a vassal of England. This lasted about 15 years, until Richard I sold it back to them to finance his participation in the Third Crusade. After 18 months of intense fighting, Henry II was able to defeat the rebels who were supporting his sons, and the Peace of Montlouis was agreed upon in 1174. This made it clear that Henry II was a strong and powerful king, and in a gesture of goodwill, he forgave his rebellious offspring, but ordered the execution of the men who had been scheming in the shadows. Richard was named Duke of Aquitaine and gained a reputation as an invincible warrior with his siege of the castle of Taillebourg in 1178, which belonged to a rival noble. Meanwhile, Geoffrey was named Duke of Brittany, John was made Lord of Ireland, and Henry the Young King spent time travelling across Europe from tournament to tournament, paying little attention to England despite being the heir. In 1182, Henry the Young King wanted to rule and ask his father for more power, but his father told him not yet. Richard was to swear loyalty to Henry the Young King, but Richard refused because of a slight he had suffered from him. This sparked a new war between the brothers. However, it did not last long because Henry the Young King fell ill with dysentery and died shortly after. Now Richard would be the heir to the English throne and John Lackland the Duke of Aquitaine, while Geoffrey remained in power in Brittany, although it seems that during a tournament he fell off his horse and died, so he was succeeded by his son Arthur. Richard and his father got along terribly, and it seems that Richard, instigated by his mother, planned to dethrone him with the help of the French King Philip II Augustus. But it wasn't necessary, as in the previous war, illness resolved the mess and Henry II died in 1189. It is said that the final blow came when he found out that his favorite son John was also involved in the conspiracy. With this, Richard I the Lionheart inherited all of his father's vast kingdom, was crowned at Westminster Abbey, and it is said that Jews were not allowed to attend the ceremony, but some of them insisted on going to offer gifts to the new king and were attacked on the way. People held a bit of a grudge against them because of the high interest rates they charged on their loans. This attack spread throughout the country, especially in York, where many Jews took refuge in a wooden tower of a fortification to escape a mob of haters. The mob set fire to the tower, and all the Jews who had taken refuge inside ended up committing suicide. It seems that Richard managed to restore some peace, but there wasn't much punishment for those responsible either. Richard I wanted peace in England because he was going to be away for many years. It was the year 1190, and he was preparing to depart for the Holy Land to fight against Saladin, who had conquered Jerusalem a few years earlier. In retaliation, the Third Crusade had been organized, known as the Crusade of the Kings, because apart from Richard, the King of France, Philip Augustus also took part, among others. To pay for the journey and everything else, Richard had to raise taxes in England a lot, and that caused quite a bit of discontent.
Basically, they stole our money.
During his absence, he appointed two regents, Hugh de Puiset, Bishop of Durham, and William de Mandeville, Earl of Essex, although he died shortly after and was replaced by William de Longchamp. And all of this was overseen by his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine. And this decision angered his brother John, who soon began conspiring with the King of France to seize the throne. There were a few armed conflicts, but they were kept under control. On the way to the crusade, in Sicily, his mother introduced him to Princess Berengaria, daughter of King Sancho VI, and he took her with him to the Holy Land. Richard conquered Cyprus from the Byzantines and then sold the island to the Knights Templar. It was there that they got married. Super romantic, all of it.
Long live couple? What?
Once in the Holy Land, he began his confrontation with Saladin, and soon managed to recapture the city of Acre. It is said that Richard was unwell and, during the siege, was shooting arrows from a stretcher. Once Acre was in his hands, he occupied the royal palace and tore down the insignia of Duke Leopold of Austria, who had also taken part in the conquest. And he did this because he claimed that a duke could not be on the same level as a king. This event will be important later on. The French king ended up returning home, but Richard decided to keep going all out with the crusade. He laid siege to the city of Jaffa and managed to conquer it as well. It is said that one day he ordered the execution of about 2,000 Muslim prisoners because Saladin was late with the payment of their ransom. He won many battles against the Ayyubid leader, but was never able to recapture the city of Jerusalem. In any case, thanks to the bravery he showed in these battles, he earned the nickname Lionheart. In 1192, Richard and Saladin agreed to a truce that would last several years. The king's plan was to return to England to put a stop to the conspiracies of his brother John, who had managed to enter London, supported by its citizens, and be named regent. Richard had a very hard time getting back to England. First, his ship ran aground near Aquileia, in Italy, and he had to continue his journey by crossing the Holy Roman Empire.
Damn, that's scary, man.
He and his companions disguised themselves as pilgrims. But in a tavern near Vienna, he ended up being recognized and was captured by Count Leopold of Austria. Leopold accused him of being involved in the death of his cousin during the crusade, Conrad of Montferrat, to prevent him from becoming king of Jerusalem. But he was angry because Richard had removed his banner from Acre.
He must have held some grudge, that's obvious.
Richard spent several months locked up in Dürnstein Castle in Austria until Pope Celestine III found out and excommunicated Leopold, because imprisoning epic crusaders was very poorly regarded. So Leopold released him and handed him over to Emperor Henry VI of the Holy Roman Empire. And what did he do? Well, he imprisoned him in Trifels Castle for 2 years. Why? Because he had supported his political rival, Duke Henry the Lion, who was married to Matilda, Richard's sister. The emperor was excommunicated, but he didn't care and demanded a ransom from his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine. 100,000 marks of silver she had to pay. Richard I was finally able to return home to England in 1194. He arrived as a hero and forgave his brother John, naming him his heir, but he did not make peace with King Philip Augustus of France, who had conquered parts of Normandy. Richard, I asked his father-in-law, Sancho VI of Navarre and Baldwin IX of Flanders for help. He raised a strong army and started clashing with the French king. One of the fortresses he built for protection was the famous Chateau Gaillard in Normandy, one of the most impressive in Europe at the time. Richard I, I achieved a ton of victories, such as the one at Fretteval in 1194, which allowed him to recover part of the territory lost in France, and the French king was forced to retreat. However, during this campaign in 1199, Richard would end up dying. He had besieged the castle of Chalus-Chabrol and was walking in front of its walls. It is said that a boy, seeking revenge against him, shot him in the shoulder with a crossbow, and the wound became gangrenous, which caused his death. But it seems that Richard forgave the boy and gave him money before dying. Other sources say that the boy was flayed alive.
What a shame! What a pity! Poor thing, poor thing!
The new king of England became John I, or John Lackland, better known as John without land. He has gone down in history as the worst Plantagenet king, and that's because he was a king who made quite a few bad decisions, even though the country already had problems before. Arthur of Brittany, son of his brother Geoffrey, Duke of Brittany, decided that he could be a better king, so a war for power broke out between the two. The English supported John, and the French supported Arthur. In 1202, the brave feat of John is recounted during the surprise attack on the castle of Mirabeau, where the French king was holding his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine. He captured 200 enemy knights and Arthur of Brittany, who ended up executed. This act caused many nobles to withdraw their support from John, and Philip Augustus managed to conquer the duchies of Normandy, Anjou and Maine. In 1203, John fled from Rouen to England, the only territory he managed to retain, apart from a small part of Aquitaine, which became known as Gascony. With the death of his mother Eleanor, the rest was conquered. This defeat led many to see John as a weak king, and although he spent his entire reign trying to recover the duchy, he never succeeded. He ruled from England, but being deprived of his income from Normandy, he had to raise taxes significantly to cover the cost of these campaigns, and even invented new taxes, which angered a lot of people. In any case, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Hubert Walter, and William Marshallon of the most powerful nobles in the kingdom advised him to abandon the planned invasion because he was not going to win. It was hard to convince him, but they managed to do it. John focused on England, and it's said that he traveled around the country with his entire entourage, settling disputes and things like that. Little John also had a lot of trouble with the church. In 1205, John wanted to appoint John de Grey as Archbishop of Canterbury, but the local clergy council chose a certain Reginald, and he traveled to Rome for Pope Innocent III to confirm him. But the Pope said neither of them would do. The chosen one was Cardinal Stephen Langton. John said no way and didn't let him enter England, so the Pope placed an interdict in 1208. John ignored it completely and ended up excommunicated. Anyway, it seems that 5 years later, they made peace. Langton was accepted as Archbishop and John submitted to Rome. Around these years, a fugitive named Robert Hood was hiding in the forests of York and was being sought. They say that the myth of Robin Hood comes from him, the outlaw hiding in Sherwood Forest, who stole from the rich to give to the poor. Although later, a century after, there was also another outlaw who may have inspired the various ballads about this character. Certainly, the popularity of the figure of Robin Hood took off with the 1819 novel Ivanhoe, written by Walter Scott. And as a curiosity, in 1209 the University of Cambridge was founded. Meanwhile, the small kingdoms of Wales felt threatened by the English, and that's when Llywelyn the Great, King of Gwynedd, appeared. This man managed to gain the loyalty of many Welsh lords, and at the Council of Aberdeen in 1216, he was proclaimed the first Prince of Wales. John Lackland wanted to reconquer his Angevin territories and allied himself with all of France's neighbors, Otto IV of the Holy Roman Empire, the Count of Flanders, and more people. They all faced Philip Augustus at the Battle of Bouvines in 1214, and the French king achieved a great victory. This was catastrophic for John, and this event is considered the end of the Angevin Empire, since under the Treaty of Chinon, John lost most of his French territories forever.
No! No, absolutely not!
With his popularity at rock bottom, several barons from northern England, led by Robert Fitzwalter, rebelled and called themselves the Army of God. They marched on London and captured it. King John ended up terrified and was forced to agree to peace talks at Windsor Castle. It was the 15th of June, 1215, and with the mediation of Archbishop Langton, the king and the barons drafted the Magna Carta, a political reform that took powers away from the king and granted more rights to freemen, especially nobles and clergy. A limitation on taxes was promised, along with swifter justice, ecclesiastical rights, and protection against illegal imprisonment and the expropriation of lands. Additionally, a council of 25 barons was established to oversee the enforcement of this Magna Carta. All of this was very nice, but King John was not truly willing to comply with this significant Magna Carta and subsequently asked Pope Innocent III to formally annul it, and the Pope readily said okay, and that's precisely when the First Barons' War dramatically broke up. While some rebels seized Rochester Castle, others rose up in the north with the support of the King of Scotland, Alexander II. John had saved up a lot of money and had more than enough to pay for a good army, and first he reconquered Rochester. We can see these events in the movie Ironclad. After that, he retook Dover by besieging its castle and finally attacked the north, driving out Alexander II. Everything seemed great, but then the son of Philip Augustus, Prince Louis, arrived on the coast of England. He took the opportunity to claim the throne with the support of the rebels, since he was married to a granddaughter of Henry II Plantagenet. In 1216, he landed in Kent and began fighting against John's troops. A storm destroyed much of the English king's fleet, and on top of that, he contracted dysentery, which began to weaken him. John ended up dying in Newark Castle, in Nottingham, but that did not mean the end of the civil war. The royal army supported John's son Henry III, who was only 9 years old, and fought on his behalf. The Battle of Lincoln and the Battle of Sandwich, both in 1217, gave victory to the royalist side, which led Prince Louis to return to France and allowed Henry III to become the new King of England, reigning for 56 years. The first priority was to end the Barons' War, and in 1217 he signed the Magna Carta, bringing about a more or less peaceful resolution. Well, it wasn't approved by him because he was just a child, but by his regent, the elderly William Marshall, Earl of Pembroke. Many of the rebellious barons promised to return the lands and castles they had seized during the Civil War, and by 1227, Henry was able to formally assume the throne of England. The king's most well-known advisor was Hubert de Burgh, and Henry III trusted him so much that he made him Earl of Kent. However, in 1232, Hubert's opponent, Peter de Ros, accused him of poisoning people and squandering public money, and the king imprisoned Hubert in the Tower of London. Peter was rewarded by the king with a good position in the government, but this Peter took advantage and began seizing lands from other nobles. These nobles protested, and in 1233 they rose up against him, led by Richard, the son of William Marshall. Richard died in battle, and the Archbishop of Canterbury had to make peace between both sides. In 1236, Henry III married Eleanor of Provence. With her, he had his heir, Edward Longshanks, so nicknamed because of his height, which was apparently almost 6'3", and later he had Edmund Crouchback. During those years, great cathedrals in the Gothic style began to be built, such as Salisbury Cathedral, Exeter Cathedral, Wells Cathedral, and Lincoln Cathedral. Canterbury Cathedral suffered a fire, and it was also rebuilt in the Gothic style. And we should also highlight the new Westminster Abbey, the site of the coronation of English monarch. It was located right next to the Palace of Westminster, and today that's where we find the British Parliament. In 1254, the Pope offered Henry III the throne of the Kingdom of Sicily, and he decided to place his son Edmund there. But of course, conquering Sicily required a lot of money, and all of this led to England's bankruptcy. The barons were starting to get really fed up with the king. He's deceiving us. Don't let him fool us. Let him tell us the truth. In 1258, the king summoned the nobles to Westminster to discuss the issue of raising taxes to finance the Sicilian affair, and the nobles were completely opposed and accused him of not respecting the Magna Carta or anything else. Because of this, seven of the most important barons forced the king to accept the provisions of Oxford in 1258. This is important because it meant that the king was giving up part of his power to a council of nobles and clergymen, who would have the final say on matters of taxes and appointments. This would meet in what began to be called Parliament. At first, they mostly met in Oxford and later on in Westminster. The most prominent figure in this council was Simon de Montfort, son of another Simon de Montfort, who you might remember from the Albigensian Crusade. This Simon was the Duke of Leicester and the king's brother-in-law. The lowest point for the English king came in 1259 with the Treaty of Paris. In it, somewhat pressured by the barons, Henry III renounced his rights to most of his grandfather's inheritance, that is, the Angevin Empire. As compensation, King Louis IX of France recognized him as Duke of Gascony. In 1262, everything changed. Henry III spoke with the Pope, and the latter declared the provisions of Oxford null and void. The following year, Simon de Montfort rebelled and managed to take the city of London. With this, the Second Barons' War began. Simon started with several victories that allowed him to take control of southeastern England. In one of them, the Battle of Lewes in 1264, the king and his son Edward were captured by the rebels. Another person captured was the king's brother, Richard of Cornwall, who was, incidentally, king of the Romans or German king. They found him hiding in a windmill, and the barons forced him to come out amid jeers. Simon de Montfort took charge of the government with the title of Senescal, although in practice he was like the King of England. He convened several parliaments without royal authorization, including members of the urban bourgeoisie and also two knights from each county. But many nobles were not convinced by his way of governing. To many, he was a fanatical and arrogant reformer, and to others, someone essential in the creation of the future House of Commons. I am a citizen of a democratic country. Will you shut up? Prince Edward managed to escape from Hereford Castle and organized an army. He faced Simon at the Battle of Evesham in 1265, which was a total massacre for the rebels, and Simon de Montfort ended up dying. They cut off his hands and feet, and hung his testicles from his ears, or his nosesides, not entirely clear. Even without a leader, the rebellion continued for a couple more years, until the royalists secured the surrender of the rebels at Kenilworth Castle, and also after the destruction of the last rebel stronghold on the Isle of Ely in 1267. Here, the Statute of Marlborough was enacted, which restored royal authority over all of England. Prince Edward went on the ninth and final crusade in 1270 and nearly died when a Mamluk tried to stab him. In 1272, during the return journey, Ed learned of his father's death, and as soon as he returned to England, he was crowned Edward I, the first English monarch in 200 years to have an English name and to speak the language fluently. It sure took them a while to learn. If you want to see how I summarize the entire history of humanity from beginning to end, I recommend subscribing and hitting the bell icon. And if you're interested in the myths and legends of cities that vanished without a trace, I'll leave a link to my new book, Dude, Where's My City, in the pinned comment. Atlantis and other lost cities in history and time. We will see you in the next video.